Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify's got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process, from syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns. Automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Welcome to the Drop the Needle podcast, your backstage pass to the corporate jungle. I'm your host, Jim Allstott, and here, industry titans step up to the mic, sharing their epic journeys. We're hitting the high notes and the low notes of their careers, creating a symphony of success. This isn't just another interview show. It's where truth bombs are dropped and secrets are revealed. So grab your conductor's baton, because who knows, this just might help you compose the next huge hit of your career. Are you ready? Let's go. Everyone, and welcome back to the Drop the Needle podcast. I'm your host, Jim Allstott, and I am so happy y'all decided to join us back for round two, as if she didn't have enough of me for the first interview together. We have the no-nonsense intuitive Miss Gail Alexander. As I mentioned previously, Gail is a spiritual guide who blends ancient wisdom with modern healing in the most fascinating ways. She's known for creating these incredible things called mandalas, which are personalized geometric patterns that work as spiritual tools for personal growth. Gail really is unique in how she combines her background in traditional therapy with spiritual practices, and she helps people navigate life's ups and downs through intuitive energy readings and Akashic records. In part two with Gail, I hope to continue basically from where we left off and hopefully touch on her new book a little bit more, sharing what I know. I also want to, or hopefully we can get through and talk about her guides, sacred geometry, and really learn a little bit more about her mandalas. So without further ado, please join me in welcoming the no-nonsense intuitive herself, Miss Gail Alexander. Welcome, Gail.
Hi, Jim. It's great to be back for part two.
Oh,
God knows where we're going this time.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it's as I said, my ADHD was really alive and kicking last time, but I liked it.
It wasn't so much that. It's that that's how all my interviews go, because my spirit team sometimes in the middle will say, no, we really need to cover this, and we're going to make sure that you go down that path because someone listening needs to hear it.
So I believe that's why that.
You know, we can have all the questions preset we want. It doesn't mean that's where we're going.
Well, you know what? That's kind of how it goes with me a lot. You know, what's the saying about, something about best laid plans or something? I don't know. I have, I definitely have plans that never really seem to go that way, which is kind of how life goes, I guess. But
yeah.
Let's go ahead and dive into this. Okay. Can we go ahead and talk about your book a little bit more?
Sure.
Okay, cool. So how did you come up with the idea for Sharing What I Know?
So it's part three to the first two books. So the first book was I Don't Know How I Know, I Just Know, which was kind of my journey of how I came back to my gifts. And then my spirit team said, there's part two. I Still Know What I Know, which was more unusual things that happened to me. And then part three is kind of how do I take everything that I know and start to teach other people how to do it for themselves.
Which is very cool. And as I mentioned before in part one, I thought it was really interesting that at the end of each section or chapter, you have a series of questions. I thought that that was brilliant because it really, I really suggest everybody get their own copy of the book, Sharing What I Know. It's fun for me because I'm reading it and I'm going, oh yeah, I'm relating these experiences. And obviously I can't relate to a number of the experiences that you have because they're quite unique in your experiences, but there are some things that come up that you can go, oh yeah. And I even touched on it essentially is like have you ever had a time when you don't listen to your intuition or something of that nature? And it was just like, yeah, all the time. And that's a tough one because I think you even reference it, you know, we as human beings, you know, we question some of those things or we want to know. So with that, there are some really cool the whole book is awesome. And I was something that I picked up just so you, I can mention this at the beginning and end of each chapter, there are mandalas. What's the significance of that?
So mandalas, okay, I guess I should finally come clean. So mandalas are kind of ancient knowledge that tap into our consciousness to give us a download of information that our conscious brain doesn't necessarily understand. My mandalas tend to be more portals than probably mandalas in that they take you to travel to different places. They open up things. So mandalas, portals, I didn't think when I first started creating them, the world was ready to call them energy portals. So we called them mandalas.
And I could see that because immediately people probably go to Star Trek or something like Beam Me Up, Scotty type of.
Well, for some people, I had a guy from London call me and he's like, I'm looking at one of your pictures and my entire room dissolved. Is that supposed to happen?
Sure. how did you answer that? I know it's in the book.
Yes, it just depends on how it opened the portals and gateways and information for you, because reality is, I think about reality is like we're all living on a holodeck from Star Trek, creating it together. So you're creating what you need to create. That was the experience he needed at the time when he looked at that mandala.
That's very cool. I like that. You had in your book, you're talking about the importance of sacred geometry. What I'd like to know is, what is sacred geometry? Can you explain that for everybody?
Well, I'll do my best. They've never really defined it for me, but for me, sacred geometry is just patterns. And the patterns form movement, and the movement unlocks our unconsciousness. So everything in nature has patterns. When you cut a cabbage, it looks like a mandala or sacred geometry. There's the Fibonacci sequence that's sacred geometry. So architecture is full of sacred geometry and angles and things like that. Our brain works on symbols. And even our language is symbols. If you look at each letter, it's actually a symbol. We just put them together to make language. So that's how our brains work. They work through symbols. So when you take sacred geometry and then you add colors and certain patterns and certain frequencies, it unlocks things for us.
I was just going to ask what the importance of the color is in the mandala itself. What is that?
You know, it's really interesting because I'll go to draw one and I'll pick all the colors ahead of time. And they're like, go ahead, you can do that. That's not the colors it's going to be by the time you're done drawing it. So you can start coloring at that, but then you're going to be doing it over. You know, I have like a lot of different brands of colored pencils for when I sit down. And yes, they're all hand-drawn. They're not computer-generated. Everyone always asks me that. And it's just how my brain works. And so the colors also, like if you've studied art therapy and things like that, colors represent feelings, emotions, things like that. So it's all tied together because the way that the world is going, all healing will be sound frequency and vibration.
That's very interesting because that was one of the things I wanted to talk about specifically, because there's a whole section in your book that discusses that sound healing frequencies. Here we are. I found it, and that's in the DNA section of your book. I'm sure you already know that, but I might be wrong about that. I thought it was, but we're talking about all healing that was going to take place was essentially going to be the result of sound healing, sound therapies, as it relates to the different frequencies and vibrations, right?
Yeah, in the beginning, when I was having Mr. Toad's Wild Ride on acid, and one of the things I saw in that week class was DNA, and I saw all the patterns and all the structures and how sound affected it, how energy affected it, how frequency moved the DNA and the structures in it, where tears were that create genetic disorders in the DNA. And considering my highest science class was Bio 1, I didn't know what I was seeing. So, you know, I asked the teacher, she's like, go back and get more information. And so they showed me how it coupled and uncoupled and how it changed colors depending on diseases and things like that. So it was just, and I haven't thought about that in 20 years, but it all seems to be coming back now.
Which is very interesting because that kind of supports your whole premise early on that we already know. Mm-hmm. And it's just a matter of remembering. And I did find it, and it is in the DNA. Okay. Section where it was, I was also told 20 years ago that all healing will involve sound, frequency, and vibration, and working on healing the auric layers of the body, and it may not need surgeries or to cut into physical body anymore. And that's very Star Trek-y. Well, you know, the little thing that heals, and there's nothing other than that little whistling little thing that they have, bones
that they scan the body with.
That's interesting. And I know we're not going to go back to it because I know you said that was one of your least favorite things
to talk about. You mean the psychic surgeries?
Yes. Yeah. And I was really apprehensive to talk about this because I didn't want to drag you down that rabbit hole.
You know, and I'm okay with talking about it. It's when I was, again, that fun week I had, one of the things we did was psychic surgery because the teacher had just come back from her week with John of God in Brazil, who does all the psychic surgeries. So it was just something that I could do. I didn't know I could do. So then for a couple of years after, I was always in the healing room doing the surgeries. And I can't remember if we talked about this last time. I would see people like lay down on it would look like a CAT scan table to me.
Yes.
And then every point that there was a disturbance in the body, I would see as light that needed healing.
That is still just astonishing to me to think about, because, well, I mean, it's so far removed from my reality that, because I've never experienced anything like that, you know, and I've taken Reiki and things like that. And sometimes you can feel certain areas in people's bodies. Mm-hmm. And I always find it interesting when people just call it out immediately, but that is certainly on a whole other level when you're talking
after
about
I watched the movie, The Matrix. Like my spirit team thought they would be funny, so they would show me like the green lines in the Matrix. So they would show me someone standing,
holy,
and the green lines would, you know, go through, and then I would see where it lit up that way. So it has changed over the years.
I don't actually
see that anymore. I just know now.
I was going to ask you, has it evolved from when you first started doing everything to today?
Yeah, well, if we go back to the whole being a reluctant mystic, sometimes I fight against the things I'm supposed to do. So it looks like one of the things that I'm going to be doing more of in the future, whether I want to do it or not, is the healing aspect of things. I focused on the mandalas. I focused on the readings. I haven't really put myself out in the world as a healer, mm-hmm. per se. So that's coming.
I think that has a whole other level of expectation and, you know, associated with it when you're talking about healing. Whenever you put healing on the tag of something, there's an expectation that, you're going to be healed, you know?
Well, the thing is you can't really heal anybody else. You can bring energy in to help someone release what they need to release or put it back into harmony in the body, but then their mindset is their mindset. And if they don't want the healing to stick or they're not ready for it, it's not going to.
Hmm. And so that's...
You know, like people will go to a healer and they're like, I felt good for the first week. And then the second week I started to feel like crap again, you know?
Right.
And that's because the thoughts come back in, which then brings everything back to the surface and brings you back into that state of needing whatever it is that you need to then be healed again.
Right. Those negative vibrations or energies that are associated with the illness to begin with, or whatever that malady might be, that it just resurfaces. That kind of stands to reason, because it got there as a result of that in the beginning. So that's really interesting.
One of my favorite ways to help people, and this was something I learned in a class, I can't remember which class or which teacher, to burn away thoughts that aren't for your highest good, is to imagine a blue flame in your third eye that's burning away. It's just kind of like a pilot light. It's on, just burning away thoughts, sensations, and feelings that no longer serve your highest good anymore, so that you can bring in new stuff.
Well, I'm going to have to turn that shit up on mine. A pilot light ain't going to do it. So
you need more like a flamethrower?
Yeah, I do. I do need something like that, a blast furnace or something. But there's a chapter in your book called Me, Metatron, Sacred Geometry, and Mandalas. Well, that's a big one right there. So why don't we talk about Metatron to start with? Who or what is Metatron?
Well, my experience of Metatron is he's an archangel, and he helps with like learning and things like that. He also helps children, and he's been one of my guides for a really long time. He's always the one that's pushing me. Like if I feel a shove, it's usually him. Jesus is much more calm in how he tries to get me to do stuff. Metatron is just like, do it now. And I'm like, no. And he's like, do it now. So like I said last time, I could do the picture now, or I could do it at 2 a.m, but it was coming through.
No matter what. Yeah. I kind of like that. There's something about it that is funny, right? You're just, I'm really not feeling it. Okay. Well, you're gonna, yeah, but you're gonna. So with that particular section that I was talking about, you talk about drawing your
Metatron. Actually, I guess I should also preface that Metatron actually dictated a lot of this book. Like, he's very funny. I generally tend to work with funny guides because that's how I like information to come in.
Me too.
And I certainly understand the gravity of what we're working with now, but we also have to keep that wonder and that joy. And I think there needs to be humor and laughter, which is why none of my books are, I mean, the subjects are overly serious, but there's also a lot of humor infused in them.
I was just going to say, I don't know that I would call it necessarily light reading, but it's certainly entertaining in the subject matter too, which is, that's something that I prefer. And I think I mentioned it last time. And I know I talk, when I talk to people, I tell them, I think everyone likes to laugh, but I mean, I absolutely love to laugh to the point of, I don't worry about being necessarily, well, inappropriate timing, maybe, you know, or bad taste sometimes, but it's all about making me laugh. And, and I don't know. But so the question was that you had, or I guess it's a question. In the book, you talk about where all your mandalas start, and you see them as though they're coming from the, is it the Amazon? Oh, okay. So I thought you said something about Amazon or the Amazon in there.
Yeah, that was later. That was the ancient cultures chapter.
Thank you. It's so much for me. As I say, that this is all new to me. So it's like, I'm taking it in and it does get jumbled from time to time. So you see all of the mandalas coming from space. And then you've already mentioned the fact that this is freehand. It's not computer generated. And anybody that sees
I do trace things. There we go. So, I mean, it's all hand drawn, but I don't measure anything.
Okay.
Like you'll see sometimes people do sacred geometry where they measure things or put in lines or things like that. I'm like, nope, I just start in the middle and whatever pattern comes out.
But I love that. And so I was looking at the mandala that you made for me and I was noticing that there's subtle differences on each one of the points. In terms of color, not shape or size or anything like that, but color. And I was just wondering if there's a significance to that.
Not that they've explained to me, but I think one of the times it varies a little bit is one, it's hand-drawn, and two, that then sometimes makes it look like they're rotating.
Oh, okay. I can see some movement.
Is how they, whatever they're doing from their side, getting it to look like it's spinning or rotating.
Okay, so that makes sense because it does have like a movement, a look of that it's alive and moving. So that's interesting. Okay, cool. So we talk about sacred geometry. We talk about your mandalas, which... Here's something else. How many mandalas have you made? Did you figure?
I think I said it was like somewhere between 3,000 and 5,000.
Okay. Which is a lot. yeah, that's a lot. And no two are the same.
Correct.
That in and of itself is just amazing.
Like snowflakes.
Yes, exactly. I guess you talk about sacred geometry. That would be a prime example of sacred geometry. Each is unique, has a shape, different features to it. This kind of blew my own mind there for a second.
Yeah, and some of the pictures are based on 12, some are based on 6, some are based on 8. There's some I've done that are 9s. So they're all different, and like how many, sometimes, you know, they're more symmetrical. Well, they're all symmetric. I can't draw not symmetrically. It drives me crazy. I went through a series where I drew pictures one year. I drew a calendar every year. So it was light to dark. So one side was all grays and blacks, and then the other side was color and how it transitioned from one.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
That's very cool. I like the way that sounds, the explanation of it. So we have mention of angels, archangels, and ascended masters. Mm-hmm. Ascended masters, who or what are ascended masters, and what do they do?
Well, I think ascended masters are like Jesus, Buddha, some of the saints from the Catholic Church. Archangels, I believe they're in the Bible. They're also in Judaism and their books too. Usually it's Gabriel, Archangel Raphael, Archangel Michael. Most people, you know, pray to him for protection. He's the one who carries the blue sword.
Okay.
And so, you know, I think it just depends on belief system. Like, I've never been one to make people believe what I believe. I'll just talk about these are the things I believe. If it resonates with you, great. If not, figure out what it means to you.
Right.
Like, everyone talks. I don't see the angels as a hierarchy, but in the English language, there's no other way to talk about it. So like you see angels and then like archangels are over that and ascended masters are kind of at that level. And then you have the Elohim, which are like the right hand of God, you know. So when you start talking in English or human terms, there's a hierarchy, but I don't really see it that way. Everything has a purpose and everything has a reason. So nothing's better than anything else.
That's interesting. I've read, and I always say read, even though it's audible, you know, 98% of the time, where I forget who the doctor was that did the hypnosis, not Brian Weiss, but there's another one that did it. And he was asking about counsel, who's there from your counsel. And it almost seemed through some of the answers that were given, not egotistical, but from the standpoint that they're there and that level, he referred to hierarchies and he did it in color, which was really interesting. This violet was a higher level than the blue. It was almost going through the rainbow, the color, you know, like a prism or a crystal, getting those colors for the hierarchy.
Well, each color has its own frequency and vibration, and some colors in our terms would have a higher vibration, just like David Hawking's work, you know, Love and Fear have very different vibrations. Same thing with colors, different vibrations, things like that. So like I used to, when I was working with eating disorder patients, a lot of them would always wear black. Various reasons. And so one day I challenged this one patient, wear something other than black. Just for the day, do an experiment, see what happens. The way they interacted with everyone was very different the day they didn't wear all black.
Really?
The days they wore black.
What was the difference?
They were more outgoing. They were more talkative. Color affects us, whether we're aware of it or not.
Wow. So. Yeah, you know what's interesting? I must have a comfort level in darker colors darker. It doesn't have to be black. It could be blue or something like that. But I'm comfortable in that. I'm also comfortable in very obnoxious colored things, especially my shoes. I don't know if you've ever taken note of my yellow, bright yellow shoes. My wife likes me to wear them when we're traveling because if we get separated, she doesn't have to look up. She looks down because I'm typically going to be the only one wearing those particular shoes though that day. So it's, but I like that. And maybe I like it because it isn't the norm, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to be different because it's something that I like. And I just guess that I'm looking at it from, I don't have to conform to anybody else's.
Well, you're just being you.
Yes. Yeah, there's no doubt.
Just authentically being you. And to you, it doesn't matter if people, you don't care if people think you're weird wearing for yellow gym shoes.
So. Nope. Actually, I could care less.
Or sneakers.
Yes.
Call them.
Yes, sneakers. I'm sneaking. So with the Ascended Masters, I guess I was looking at it from the standpoint that when they were talking about in some of the books that I've listened to, referring to your council, and that, I guess that's where I was going. Okay, so an Ascended Master must be that next level guide, but so what you're saying is it's not necessarily the case.
I think it depends on what, I think our spirit team changes depending on what we're working on. We always have our two main guides, our two guardian angels that are always with us through our whole lifetime. But then different guides come in at different times depending on what we need to work on and what we need to work through.
So why?
At least that's my belief.
Okay. So, No, let's go with that. I'm wondering why there are two instead of one or instead of five. Is there any significance?
I don't know. I just always heard and learned that there were two. So I've just always stuck with it. I've never actually asked why.
Do they have different responsibilities or jobs?
No.
No.
Their job's the same.
In case one gets tired. I'm tired of dealing with that asshole. Here, your turn. I'm sure mine have said that numerous times.
Mine get tired often.
Oh, I mean, yeah. Mine are probably on break right now. So, yeah, he's got this covered. He's going to just go. So I like that in that you mentioned spirit team, because I'd like to talk about that a little bit, because again, off air or actually in some other things that we've done together, I've asked about spirit team, and I'm very curious about that as to what their role is in our lives.
Well, I think it depends, like I said, what you're working on. Like your spirit team can be your angels, your loved ones who've crossed over, archangels, ascended masters, depending on what your belief system is about multidimensional beings. You know, they could be part of your spirit team. I think it's just what you're working through. Sometimes it's more angels than other things. Our family members usually tend to be more guides, you know, okay, trying to help us out of a sense of love and getting us to where that, you know, they know we need to go, but sometimes we don't always go there.
Which is that whole free will thing. It'd be so much easier to listen to the guides. Oh, speaking of which, we may or may not have touched on this, but I'm curious as to how they communicate with you and then how you communicate with them. Is there anything special that you have to do to get dialed into that, or was there anything special? No. Okay.
I wish I could say yes, but I am very blessed and very fortunate. Like whenever I ask a question, I just get an answer. Mostly for other people. I'm not as good as listening when it's for me.
Comes for you, yeah.
But I'm great at getting information for other people. So
I think, isn't that the way though? I mean, as a person of service, if you will, that's kind of a natural occurrence, I suppose, you know?
And it's like I'm always on. I don't seem to have an off button.
I believe that to be 100% true, having, it's interesting. I don't want to weird you out or anything. When there are some questions that come up in our spiritual social club meetings, if you're not on the first page, and I'll look on the chat to see that you're in there, I'll sift through because I want to see how you react to something. Because when you get something, you don't have a poker face about it. It's like you move in everything and then you come back forward. It's like a little lift and back. Okay, this is what I'm picking up, and you're very good about it from the standpoint that it's not authoritative in any way. Your presentation of that information, it's what you've received and your interpretation of that information. You're very, very kind and very careful about that, which I definitely appreciate in doing that.
I think it's because I had teachers that weren't. Like, I had teachers who kept pushing and pushing and pushing. And that's not how everyone needs to learn. And that's not how people... No. Get information. So I'll give an example. So like I said, I worked with eating disorders, which is oftentimes a difficult population to work with. And I worked with them for 30 years as a therapist. Oh, wow. And sometimes they're not straightforward in giving you information. So I remember someone in a group asked me a question and I said, do you want me to sugarcoat it? Or do you want me to tell you like straightforward? And she's like, I want you to sugarcoat it. So I took 15 minutes talking in circles, answering her question. And then she's like, okay, could I have it straightforward now?
3-second answer. That's funny. That's very funny. I use something very similar when I'm talking to my boys, because I also coach, right?
Right.
And even though it wasn't, when my boys were in high school and playing football in high school, I wouldn't offer up anything. They'd ask, hey, what'd you think of the game? And I said, well, do you want coach speak or you want dad? I'll take coach speak. And I go, ba, 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 ba. And always ending with what they did well, you know, because it's not like, you know, well, you need to do this, you need to do this, you need to do this. It's, you know, a combination of those things. But And then there are times, like when my oldest boy, he'd say, well, how did he do today? And I asked that question, do you want coach speak or dad? I just want dad today. He did great. I love watching you play. It's one of my favorite things to do. I'm very proud of you. Okay, thanks. You know, I don't even know why I said that
with my friends. Do you want a therapist answer or do you want your friend answer? Because they're two completely different answers.
Oh, heck yeah. I bet that would be really hard sometimes. Well, for them and for you, I would think even moreover for you, it would take some time to get comfortable with hey, you know what? what do you want here? Because
well, and
you
then
have
with
it.
Me throwing the third thing, or do you want a completely intuitive answer?
Oh yeah, forget about that, right? That's something completely different right there. Completely different. I noticed something in your book. You talk, I think it's actually, it might be, I don't know if it's in the epilogue or about the author, but one of your mottos essentially is my motto. And this was my motto before you and I even met. It's a privilege and an honor to assist you. You had a very similar credo in there, and I'm trying to. You probably know it right off the top of your head.
Especially as a therapist, you know, like people were entrusting me with their lives, and I never took that lightly. Like I took it as a big responsibility and tried to show up the best that I could. Was I always perfect? Did I have my bad days? Yes. But for the most part, I tried to show up the best I could to be there every day because that's what that role was.
Yeah. You're right. That is a very, very important job, especially when you think about it, when people are hanging on every word sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. You know, but here's the thing, too. I know that to be true from the spiritual perspective as well, because there are those that are out there that need something, some validation, confirmation, something so desperately that they're just hoping against hope that you're going to give them an answer. And you're going to, and knowing you, you're going to give them an answer, but it might not be the answer that they had crafted in their heads.
It might be the answer that they have to grow into.
Completely different. completely different. Yeah.
That happens a lot. Like, I'll say things and they're like, no, you're misunderstanding me. And I'm like, no, this is where you're going.
No,
this is what you need to know to help prepare for what's next for you.
See, and I love that because there, and I know that you at some point in time were kind of questioning the whole teaching thing, being a teacher of things. But I think that that's a great way to teach, to lead, to mentor somebody is just that. You're not going to do it for them. You're going to tell them point them in a direction that they need to go. Mm-hmm. And they're going to have those little ups and downs and sideways type of moments to get to where they need to go. But I think that that's all for a reason too. Mm-hmm. It really is. It's interesting.
My favorite example when I was a therapist, and it's in the eating disorder book that I wrote with my coworker, which was actually my first book was on eating disorders, but is from the original Willy Wonka movie, The Wonka Vader, where you could go sideways and byways and diagonal ways, and that the only button that was never pushed till the end was the red button. And then they had to gain enough speed to crash through the ceiling to change your view. And oftentimes that's what life feels like. We have to get up enough speed to crash through the glass ceiling that we've created. And then we get a whole new view of the world.
Yeah, you just blew my mind on that one. I saw where you were going with that too. As soon as you said it, it was like, zap, a lightning bolt.
That was my favorite example to use with clients all the time. Yeah,
that's a great example to break through, to get a different vantage point, a different viewpoint.
Because that's all movement forward or recovery is a change in perspective. It's seeing yourself differently in the world and that you don't need the things that you used to need that you thought were safe, but that were hurting you, and that there's a way to be safe in the world without having to hurt yourself.
So that's about, to me, that encapsulates or encompasses a spiritual journey for somebody too. Mm-hmm. You know, there's it's very similar because you're going through some different things that aren't necessarily widely accepted in the world.
It's different growing pains. Yeah.
For sure. Absolutely. For sure. So let's put your teaching cap on for a second here.
Okay.
For those that are out there that are just getting started or have a desire to get started, where is that from your practice and your modalities? Where do you start?
Well, like I said, I think it's different for each person. I found authors that I really liked, and then I like read all their books, or I went and hear a lecture for them. One of the things that I found really helpful was the books by Sherry Huber, who's a Zen teacher. Mm. It's like everyday practical knowledge that we forget. And it's about being mindful enough to remember it. So like I read every single book that she wrote, and I used to recommend them to my clients all the time because it's that common sense stuff that we forget to do when we're on journeys.
Yeah. I think we also have the tendency or propensity to overcomplicate things instead of using the KISS methodology, which is a very helpful method, by the way, is to keep it simple. It's easier to maintain those habits and your chops, if you will. And instead of, oh, what did I do last time? I did this and I spun around twice and all this other stuff.
I think we've learned that, and there's a saying, you know, if you haven't worked hard, you know, do you deserve it? Mm. So sometimes we create these extra steps because we think it has to be hard in order to deserve it. And I always used to challenge my patients or clients on that in recovery. What is your definition of recovery? Like, is it even something that you think you can obtain? Because if you don't think you can get there, or you don't have a definition of it, how are you going to know when you get there?
That's very, very insightful, because that's also very accurate. What does that look like?
Mm-hmm. Like, so you're on a spiritual journey. What does that look like for you? Do you have to have these woo-woo experiences? You know, it might just be little signs that you're getting. I think you have to define the spiritual journey for you. My experience isn't going to be the same as everyone else's, which is why I haven't always wanted to share, because like I said, mine's Mr. Toad's Wild Ride on Acid. Not everyone is going to have that.
Well, thank God.
That's what I needed to wake me up, because I was so skeptical.
Well, talk about something that's an extreme. Was your skepticism that high that it really took essentially Mount Rushmore falling on you to get you to trust everything again?
I think so. I think I had a pretty big wall around myself from things that had happened. And I once had a teacher do this reading on me, and she's like, here's your psychic abilities, and then here's what you put to block your psychic abilities, and here's you crashing through it because your psychic abilities are coming whether you're going to deal with them or not. There's no way to shut them off. So I think for everyone, you have to decide. And I think people have experiences, they get freaked out and they're like, I'm not doing that. And so that's why it's like important to think about, what does the spiritual journey mean to you? You know, because I know I had experiences and I'm like, what was that?
Right.
And who the hell do I talk to about that? You know, especially being in the counseling field, who the hell do I talk to? Because if I start telling people I'm having these experiences, I'm going to be with the patients locked up in one of those rooms.
Well, 100%. And they're not going to trust what you're saying to be objective. It's going to be considered to be a biased statement or opinion too, because they would think that you had lost all objectivity at that point. Yeah, that would be very difficult, because that's away from mainstream. I bet it was very difficult. I can't imagine some of the things that you've experienced that way. So, question for you: in a number of the groups or seminars or classes or what have you, there's often a reference made to humanity leveling up. And I'm curious, so where are we and where are we leveling up or going to that you see? Whoops.
Okay, so the leveling up is humanity as a whole has a choice in front of them. If we're going to stay in the third dimension, which is all duality, good or bad, white, light and dark, or if we're going to jump to the fifth dimension, which is living from a heart space. And, you know, you hear talk about the heart so much now, like to prepare us for it. So what's going to happen is some people are going to stay in the third dimension. That's where they're comfortable staying. And then the rest, or the people that want to level up, will go to the fifth dimension. Same earth, just different vibrations and frequencies. People who don't want to do either, there's going to be mass exoduses from Earth. And we're seeing that now. A lot of our loved ones are dying or things like that. Because information that they gave me 20 years ago was that the planet had to get lighter to make the jump. There were so many souls down here, the planet was too heavy to jump to the fifth dimension.
That's kind of interesting that's... We're going to have to lighten the load, you know, it just reminds me of like a ship going down, lighten the load, throw the excess weight off. And that's kind of what it is.
It's kind of like that in some ways. And everyone is seeing it differently in their own life play out right now. because I don't know how many people I've talked to where friendships are ending or marriages are ending or things like that. Well, it's just like it doesn't serve you anymore. Right. No matter what you do, you just can't stay in it. That's that shift. That's that dynamic that's changing.
And I'm seeing that, especially with people passing away, you know, and we're talking about seemingly very healthy, you know, vibrant people are boom, gone. I mean, just gone. Two of my friends last year, in December, one was in his 30s, the other was in his late 40s, and the one that was in his mid 30s was a college athlete drafted by the Orioles to play baseball. And he was a freaking stud and dropped dead in his parents' bathroom. He just went upstairs and stepped into the bathroom and his mom heard a big thump and he dropped. My other friend was on a business trip in Canada, turned the corner in an aisle and dropped. And they were actually two of the kindest, most vibrant people I've ever met in my life. And they were gone.
And sometimes I think about people like that, the people who are like these really bright lights. It's like they know they're not going to be here long, so they cram so much in such a short period of time.
You know, so John St. Augustine did a TED talk about it, and he was talking about human math or human mathematics, essentially with a, and forgive me, John, if I'm off on this, but there was in his TED talk, he was talking about the life expectancy of both male and female combined in the United States and Canada. And he said, we were like 31st in the world as far as life expectancy at 79.3 years. And then came Canada. I think they were like number 5 or something like that. And a much higher, you know, they lived longer. I forget, it was like 85 or something like that. So what he did is then he started to break it down into days. And then he was talking about some people that did the most profound things in the fewest days. And one of them was Marilyn Monroe. He said, you know, 50 years after her death, she is still viewed as one of the most iconic, I don't know, pinup girls or whatever you want to, I forgot what he said. So again, forgive me, John. And then John Denver, same thing. And he used a number of examples in that.
Steve Irwin, you know.
Yes. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, when you think about that, it's not, I forgot, it was such a cool saying, and I have it in my notebook. It was one of those 1:30 in the morning wake ups, and I was like, I'm going to see what John St. Augustine had to say on his TED talk. It was awesome, by the way. But it was, yeah, I mean, it was really interesting because I think he was saying it's not the number of days in your life. It's what you do. It's not the number of breaths in your life that you take. It's the number of times your breath gets taken away or something in your life, whatever it is. You get what I'm saying. It's what you make out of that. And it's crazy how much some of these folks accomplish in such a short amount of time.
Because they know they weren't going to have a lot of time, so they had to get it all done.
Which is cool. Well, I mean,
it's a little bit different way of thinking about it. That's all.
Well, I mean, yeah. And I think we even talked about it in the last one with my mom knew when she was, she was going to pass. But, I just find that incredibly interesting. And then I went and he did the same thing. I was like, oh gosh, well, if that's the way it is, how many more days do I have? And you go, oh, I've got about 1700 more days. And you go, shit, that's not a lot. 1700 more days left. And you go, okay, then 1698, 1697. It's just, and you know, he was also very careful to say that doesn't mean you're not going to live more or longer than that number of days. It also doesn't mean you're going to live that long either. You could die on the way home.
It all comes down to how do you want to spend your time?
Right. Right.
Do you want to thrive in your life or do you want to just survive in your life?
Two totally different games being played there. Really. I mean, it truly, truly is. So in your practice, and I'm going to try to connect your spiritual practice with that. Is part of what you do, do you help people in that regard? If they know, but they feel like they're stuck in their life, do you have a means to try to help get them out of that?
I think that, yes. I mean, I think there's things that you can say to people to have them reflect on where they are versus where they want to be, and then what steps they could take. And I think that's why coaching is so big right now. I think that's what a lot of coaches do. It's not necessarily the psychological component. It's the steps that you can actually take to move from one to place to the other. Like, one of my favorite books, I should have owned stock in this book, was called From Fear to Freedom. Her book was called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. From Fear to Freedom is my Facebook group. Sorry, I sometimes get that confused.
I like that.
But Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway by Susan Jeffers. I should plug who it was by. She talks about the scale of 0 to 10. Unless you're at that 10, you're not going to do what you need to do. You can be at 9.995 for a really long time until you're so, you know, this is the only option left. You're not going to take the steps you need to take. So it's helping people start to see that.
Yeah, we used to call that sick and tired of being sick and tired.
And it's very similar.
Yeah, it's like
based on fear. Yeah.
When are you going to do something about it? It's that actionable step that makes the difference.
I used to get in trouble. Because
what, you know, in trouble?
Hard to believe as a therapist, I would sometimes say to the clients, okay, so you're having a pity party right now. Is it time to get the black balloons and black confetti and streamers and let's really do this thing upright? Because this is where you seem to want to stay. They never particularly enjoyed that when I said that.
I could see that, but that's a cold dose of reality there too. It's just like, okay, enough. Stop. You have, I guess people have control over that, to get out of that. But so
sometimes it's just pointing out that they're in it. Sometimes they don't even know. It's so familiar. You don't even know you're in it.
Yeah. Yeah. I know for a fact that there are people out there that have no idea that they're suffering from depression because they've been in it so long. It's just life. They don't know. And then when they start feeling better, they go, oh, I guess I was depressed. Because you could ask them, have you been feeling depressed in the last 2 weeks? No, it's my normal self. And that's true. What they're actually saying is true. They're giving you accurate information as they know it and understand it, as opposed to what it's really going on.
It's that shift in perspective.
Right, breaking through that glass ceiling on the elevator, the Wonkavator, to get through.
And the Wonkavator, yeah.
That's a great image for me, because I know exactly what that looks like in the movie, and they're just flying over the countryside, over is it Papa Joe's house and all that stuff. Very cool. That's very cool. With regard, I'm going to go back to the spiritual aspect of some things, and then maybe we'll talk, if you want to talk about your mandalas and the personalization of them, then we talk about that. But we started to hit on that leveling up aspect of like 3 to 5D, and where you're coming from the heart So I guess I didn't ask this, but is that what you see too? Do you see us as a society or humanity leveling up and getting to that point soon or no?
I used to. I mean, I always have hope. I always have hope that humanity is going to make good decisions. A lot of it's out of my personal control as to what humanity as a whole decides, but I do my little piece every day. Like I put the mandalas out in the world when I'm guided to help shift and change and unlock things for people to move in a different direction. And I think that that's all any of us can do is our own part and be clear on what we're putting out in the world. Like the example my spirit team used to give me all the time was think about cell phones for a minute. Okay. So How many people do you know are yelling and screaming on their cell phones? Quite a few. Like you walk by people and they're yelling.
Yeah.
Now think about that. Because on a cell phone, it's being beamed to space to a satellite, and then it's beamed back to us on Earth. So think about all the anger that we're literally beaming back to ourselves.
Right. And the collateral that's coming around us, because I don't think you can not be impacted by those vibrations or energies that are around you. There's fallout.
Most people don't. Most people don't think about that. Like when you see people screaming, it's not just impacting the person they're talking to on the phone. It's impacting all of us because it's coming back at all of us.
Right. Right. And charged a little bit too, coming back. That's wow. Some unique perspectives, that's for sure. Seriously. I mean, some seriously unique perspectives. You know what? I just realized because of who I am, we didn't really finish that spirit guides question that I had for you. Like how many guides are on your counselor team? Do you know?
I have no idea, but I'll give an example. So when I was on Mr. Toad's Wild Ride class, the teacher said to me, well, I was banned from asking questions after the second day because I kept holding people up because I was so curious about everything. And so I came down for breakfast one morning and she's like, did you have to bring your entire entourage with you? And I'm like, what are you talking about? She's like, do you have any idea how many guides are with you right now and how crowded it is? I'm like, no, because it wasn't new to me. I mean, this is how it's always been. So I didn't know how big my entourage was, but apparently it's fairly large.
Wow. Wow. So this may seem like
I have like gatekeepers now.
Okay.
So like I have certain guides who will manage the rest of the people who want to talk to me.
Yeah, no. We don't have room for you today.
I have bouncers. I have bouncers. Spiritual
yeah,
bouncers.
That's right. You have your door people, your doormen. Yeah. Nope. Not today. Can't let you in. You don't know.
And then my friend jokes, who's very intuitive, like I'd be working my day job and she's like, I have a question for you. And my spirit team would show me that you had a closed sign over your head. So apparently, like when I'm doing my normal day job, I have a closed sign that so no one can talk to me or interact. It doesn't always work, but most of the time it does. And then wow. I guess when I'm done with work, I take the sign off and
they can't wait to catch up with you. That's funny.
Sometimes.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Because I think one of the important things, if I could say this, is that we're in a human body. Mm-hmm. We're not on the other side. They have unlimited source and energy and frequency and vibration. Right. And as humans, we do not. And sometimes that disconnect is very evident. Where they want us to just keep going like the Energizer Bunny, except in a human body, you can't.
I could see that, especially when it comes to your mandala creations, which I do want to ask this for those that might have an interest. So if somebody wants to get their own unique mandala from you? Uh-huh. Have you created a mandala for them? How do they go about doing that?
It's super easy. You can either send me an email or call me or text me, or you can just go to my website and book the appointment. The person does not have to be present. I didn't used to ask any questions, and that made people really uncomfortable. So now I'll ask, you know, do you have favorite colors? Do you have a specific intention for the mandala? And 9 times out of 10, the person always says, no, I really just want to see what comes through. But sometimes I've learned that I have to ask a couple questions to make people feel more comfortable, as opposed to me just going, I'm going to tap into your energy field and see what your guides and energy needs right now in order for you to move to the next step.
So when I had you do my mandala, I gave you the intention. Color, it didn't even come up. And the colors that are in there, like the yellowish, greenish yellow, that's kind of like my shoe color, which is really interesting. Yeah. It's so when I got that, I was like, oh, that was very familiar to me, and you didn't know that. So that was very cool to me.
I think anybody who's, I don't know what word to use, inauthentic, psychic, medium, whatever it is going to give you information that validates you that there's no way that they could know.
Yes. Yes,
so that's how I agree. To tell the difference versus, like, if someone's just reading cards and they're saying, well, this card means this, or, you know, and then they ask you, like, I'll ask questions in a reading. I already kind of have the information.
Right.
But sometimes I'll be told, ask questions, because they need to come to this conclusion themselves versus you saying it.
Well, that's where it gets to be the, I think, the most effective way of having a breakthrough, whether that be from a spiritual perspective or professional or anything for that matter. It's when it comes from you. And you have mentioned multiple times that we already have we already know all of this information. We already know, but it's just having the fog, you know, brushed away a little bit so you can get to those answers.
Here is the question that I have everyone ask themselves to kind of quiet your monkey mind and get to the answer. I say, if money is an issue, you don't hurt anybody and it doesn't cause anybody pain, what do you want to do? And everyone automatically knows the answer.
Yeah.
But they don't want to say it out loud, because if they were to follow that, then people might get hurt, or it might not bring them the money they thought they, you know.
Sure.
But that's a really good way to find out what's really your intuition. Because you know, in an instant, the answer pops in there as soon as you ask yourself that question.
That's amazing that happens. But and that just, again, supports exactly what you were saying, that you already know what that is. something I didn't know is when you look, and I'm going to reference your book for a second, in the About the Author section. Uh-huh. I thought your toolbox was pretty freaking full, but here's Gail has since studied many different healing traditions, including ARCH, ancient rainbow conscious healing, angelic healing fire, DNA theta healing, EFT, Reiki, and quantum touch. Okay. And what else? I mean, holy shit, Gail. Some of these things I have never heard of at all, which is not surprising. It's not, but immediately I'm going, ooh, what is that? Ooh, that sounds, you know, angelic healing fire.
Was basically healing with the angels. When I took all the classes, it wasn't, and I don't mean any disrespect by this, it wasn't like I learned anything. It's like I remembered how to do all of it. So it's like when I do sessions, do I go, oh, this is quantum or this? Everything just integrated in me like that. And then it's just part of everything that I do.
Which is so freaking cool. But for me, as an, you know, the outsider who doesn't have that knowledge, I'm going, holy shit, how do you differentiate? When is it time to do this? And the fact that, again, you're no-nonsense intuitive, but your intuition is telling you or leading you. And I would imagine that there are times when you kind of have a combo platter of sorts on things of what you're doing.
It's basically just become me. You know, it's just whatever needs right. to come forward in a session comes forward in a session.
So. Well, I think that's really cool. So let me ask you this, and this is something we haven't discussed.
Okay.
Do you have any plans in the future to start classes or like leading classes or giving classes or programs or anything like that?
You know, right now I have an idea of something else I want to do. It's, you know, if people ask me to come talk, I'm always going to do that because it's fun. Like when I did the All Souls retreat and right. we all did a healing in what, 11 minutes or less.
Yeah, that's cool.
And it was pretty, from the feedback that everyone said, they're like, that was really intense.
Oh yeah. So. Yeah, it was quite something. And I was, so I guess this is the human mind. I was very interested and excited to hear from the people that I knew. And obviously I was interested in others, but, and it's not even like I knew everything about you or what you did and all the different tools and modalities for healing that you had, because I didn't and probably still don't. And I'm getting to know you. So, I mean, I was really riveted by that. You and Julie, Dr. Mm-hmm. Julie, I should say, that was just something to me. And of course, Julie Grant is hilarious. She said that it was like when I was sitting between Gail and Julie, it was just like, whoa, put that away. You're knocking me over here. And I said, oh my gosh, when they just start relaxing, I could just see them just forgetting about it. And whoa, this big wave of energy just comes over. And it's yeah. just like, holy shit, hold on. So yeah, that's pretty cool stuff. Now, mm-hmm. let me ask you, is there anything else that you'd like to maybe bring up in our remaining time?
I think the biggest thing is just for everyone to remember that being human is about being the most authentic that we can be and having fun and love in our lives. We get bogged down by all the other stuff, but that's really what we're here for. And that's what we're here to learn, is how to have a human experience and be in kind of a human body and still be the magnificent beings that we are.
Amen. Yeah, I think that's a wonderful thing to aspire to, yeah. is make the most out of your life. Just be kind. Mm-hmm. Just be kind. So normally this is the point where we would start asking musical questions, but we did ask musical questions last time. However, there is going to be music discussed at this point, because when we were talking after the show, there were songs that kept popping up, and I should have said blah 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 blah. So I want to know, and so you had said that these were songs that your guides, because they're very musical in nature mm-hmm. and how they present themselves to you. What were the songs that came up?
Well, the one that we were talking about that came up was Spinning Wheels by Blood, Sweat, and Tears. They like to sing the entire song to me from time to time, but mostly the Spinning Wheels part.
Because that's a great song.
It's spinning. Yeah, yep. So that was the main one. And then they wanted me to talk about like new age music. The first song that I ever heard that was new age was Kitaro's Lightness of Spirit that like blew my mind.
I do know Kitaro. Yeah.
Yeah, look up Lightness of Spirit. It is like the coolest song. And then the other songs that were popping in were the Fifth Dimensions. Like sometimes they'll sing Up, Up and Away and My Beautiful Balloon. But mostly they sing Aquarius, Let the Sunshine In.
Yes, I was just going to say, what about Aquarius?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when my friend who studies Vedic astrology tries to talk about me in my chart, all they do is sing Aquarius in my head. I have no idea what she's saying because there's a whole chorus of people singing when the moon is in the seventh house of Jupiter.
Aquarius.
So I'll go, what did you say? Because I have a soundtrack going on in my head.
That's funny.
Couple of the other songs that popped in that a lot of people like Grace Slick from Jefferson Airplane put out a solo album when I was younger, and there's a song on it called Let It Go that just had such a profound impact on me.
Not the Frozen Let It Go.
No, not the Frozen Let It Go. Grace Slick, Let It Go.
That's great.
And then Martin Page in the House of Stone and Light is like a really powerful song. But one of the things I noticed when I was putting this together is that there's always a theme. My spirit team always has a theme of whatever music they bring through. And then a really powerful song, like a meditative song, is called Amen by, I don't know how to pronounce her name. It's Sirgun Kaur, K-A-U-R.
Okay.
It's a very powerful song. So, you know, I think it's whatever resonates with you. Mm-hmm. And I would challenge you, because we were talking a little bit earlier about being depressed and things like that. I would challenge you to look at what type of music you're listening to. Are you listening to music that helps you express feelings that you're having? And if you're having angst or are depressed, that you're listening to more of that music, you know, to feel like you're understood and heard, which can keep you stuck? Or are you listening to upbeat music, which helps pull you out of that? So I think it's really important to think about what music you're listening to, because it really is the soundtrack of our life and really helps us or can hinder us, depending on what you're stuck in.
Well, absolutely. And I also think that there's a subconscious component to that, too, that you may not consciously be aware of the vibration that is being, you know, thrown at you, I guess is what I'm feeling. That because that is, it's like mud or weight if it's a low vibrational sound or song or what have you, something that has that. I mean, there are times when people put songs on because they want to feel bad and they want to cry and they want to get rid of that. You know, good on you. Great. For doing that, right? You're going to get through this, and by feeling it, and you feel it and go, okay, I'm done. Let's go.
But not everybody gets to the point about being done. That's
no,
the problem.
No. And I think that, again, this is one of the reasons that I wanted to take this turn, is because oftentimes, well, it's about maybe not even being able to understand yourself. If you can't understand yourself, how can somebody else necessarily understand who you are, except who you are, where you're feeling like you're an outcast and you can't describe it? You know, that's a difficult thing to do. And that also comes with that, the whole spiritual component that we're discussing too, because this is not mainstream thinking all the time. In some cultures it is, because we talk about prajna being in Brazil, where it's commonplace, and meditation. They learn how to meditate early on. Her entire family, they, you know, from the time she was born, they were in to meditation, spirits, different things, different types of energies and things of that nature. So it was commonplace, but for our Western culture, it isn't. And it's, well, the Salem witch trials, right? it wasn't necessarily that somebody was evil incarnate. They were able to maybe heal somebody in an unorthodox way. And that could have been not using leeches at that time, you know. Oh, he's a witch. He floats. He's like wood, you know. It's just different. And
one of the examples I heard, which just cracked me up, was a comedian who was talking about how yoga was a very Eastern thing. You know, we used to do it in our pajamas. And then it became a blood sport. Huh. Like, if you're rushing, you're not doing it right. That was not the, but you know, $200 yoga pants, and you have to have the right mat, and yeah, you have to have the right this. You know, it's taking away from what it was really designed to do. And so I just, that she was so funny when she was explaining it. But yeah.
Awesome. Well, it's just about time to cue the music for today's episode. But don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe to the Drop the Needle podcast to stay up to date on our latest episodes. I'd also like to take a moment to thank everyone for tuning in today, and I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Drop the Needle podcast. I'd also like to thank our special guest, the no-nonsense intuitive, Miss Gail Alexander, for being on our show today. So, Gail, thank you, thank you, thank you. And one more time, a reminder on how people can get in touch with you to get a mandala or one of your sessions.
Gail-Alexander.com.
Excellent. Thank you, Gail-Alexander.com. And by the way, it will be in the show notes along with her bio and a picture of the mandala that she sent over. So again, I invite you to head on over to our show notes where there's going to be a link to the playlist from today's episode as well. All right, my Drop the Needle posse, like Billy Joel says, from the highs to the lows to the end of the show, this is the end of our show. Until next time, this is Jim Allstott wishing you infinite health and happiness and the perfect playlist for your life. Thank you again for being the best part of us. Catch you next time.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
This holiday season, reach for the one butter that never disappoints. Kerrygold. Made with milk from grass-fed cows on Irish family farms, it's rich, creamy, and perfect for baking. Whether browning butter for cookies or crafting the flakiest pie crust, Kerrygold's high butterfat content makes all the difference in flavor and texture. Holiday treats will taste extraordinary.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.